In this episode, we take you into the creation of the Unified Ascension Ladder and what it means for you personally and your business, and how it can help you truly get into the hearts and minds of your customers. You are listening to the Fifth Hammer Growth Podcast, where we help you find harmony in imperfection as you journey towards success in life and in business. So Dave, you just got back, man, from the trip. Tell us about it.
I'm a rambling man. Well, you guys know I'm on this project, and I've been down a couple of times, actually. The first time, and we'll get into this later, but I presented basically a growth marketing plan to them. And then now that I'm actually working with them, I went down this week for 4 or 5 days. And it is just, you know, we experienced this at Microbe, like living the mission and the values. And you know, as you grow, and I think some of this is also, they're still kind of small. They have a team of 14, you know, and at Microbe, we started to grow, and I feel like maybe we lost some of this, but they're still in that fun, small core team stage where everybody
is drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Totally embraces. You know, they've got these core tenets that they refer to themselves as a tribe. They've got these core tenets that everybody like just genuinely lives, eats and breathes. And it was funny because I got on the scale this morning. So I set a target this quarter to hit 225. It's just been a while since I've been
225 bench press.
No, 225 pounds. Actually, I can do that a few times.
So you're going down.
Yeah.
Not like to hit.
Right.
Okay. So. Okay.
Yeah, I
just
need to
make sure.
That's my target, 225 bench press.
When we all first met, I was like 250. So I'm trying to get in that 225 range. And I tell you that because as I stepped on the scale, I was like 228. And I have not been able to break 230 for months, even though I've been focusing
nice,
on
dude.
It.
Nice, dude.
But it came on the tail end of being around these folks for about a week.
Yeah.
It's the first work trip that I was on where I genuinely worked out every morning. We cold plunged every morning. Have you guys done like a legit cold plunge? No, we did.
Did you do one? My neighbors have one, and they've invited me a ton.
I haven't done a cold plunge like in a ice. Like my cold plunge has always been like early morning freaking lakes.
Okay. Morning ponds. Yeah, like the polar bear plunge.
I haven't done like an ice bath cold plunge.
Okay, so I'm getting goosebumps right now thinking about it because we did those cold plunges in Mexico and it was like 60 degree water.
Yeah.
Still cold as hell, right?
Yeah.
This was like 40 degrees, ice around you. The first time I jumped in, I went, ah! And then I remembered all these guys are looking at me. I can't wuss out. Like I got to go in. So I started to like, my first reaction was just jump out.
Yeah.
And I just, flight. So I started to jump out and then I remembered everybody was watching me. So I just took a deep breath and I went all the way under, which turns out is like a really good way to get acclimated to it because it hits your face and your head. And then I came up, shoulders in, hands in, everything. And then your heart rate instantly at that, you know, temperature, your heart rate just jumps. Like it was, I don't know. I wasn't watching it, but I could feel it like in my chest, just gone. And I was like, I couldn't breathe. And I was just, you had to breathe through it. And then like 30 seconds in, you just settle in and this like euphoria hits you. And when you get out,
sounds like what I experienced during hot yoga.
Well, maybe, yeah. Like these extreme temperatures, when you get out, you're numb and you just feel amazing. And they say the serotonin that you get from that is equal to like cocaine.
Crack cocaine, baby.
You know that?
No, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. There's no crash. It just rides you out, like sustains you the rest of the day. So what I noticed is by like the third day, and I know there's like a lot of things people say about cold plunges and I know it's like getting cliche and whatever. Like I posted about it on Twitter and I got like this guy gave me like an eye roll emoji. And I was like, but dude, like by the third day, there were things that I would procrastinate on that I wasn't procrastinating on anymore. And I wasn't even thinking about it. I was just facing the fear of, and that just hitting that cold water every day was like creating a new pathway in my brain.
That's cool.
Just amazing.
How long are you in the water?
So the first time at that 40 degree level, I was like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I got out And then I walked around a little bit, and then I went in for 2.5 minutes, and then I went for 4, and then I went for 5. So by the time I left, I was in there for like 5 to 6 minutes. Wow. And I, every minute I would dunk my head under and just hold there for a little bit, 'cause I just kind of liked how that, it felt like it amplified everything. But
it reminds me of the saying or mantra, like, how you do this is how you do everything. You heard that one before.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It's like how you show up in little things, like, is how you show up in every aspect of your life, and how you change in little things is how you change in bigger things.
Yeah. Know? So Andrew Huberman, he actually did a brain scan on David Goggins. And what they did is they have this, like,
during a cold plunge.
No, it was. So I'll set it up better. There's like a Huberman's lab has this fear, this way to basically study fear, the brain's reaction to fear response. And what they do is they find something about you, not, they interview you first and they find something like that you're really afraid of. So if it's heights, like your phobias, heights, spiders, whatever. So they were doing a study on a group of people. Goggins happened to be there, and they found out he was deathly afraid of sharks. And so as they were like, okay, who wants to go first? Goggins went, I go. And he knew he was going to be facing a shark. And when they looked at his brain scan, as the fear response kicked in, it shut off.
Your brain just goes dark.
And the conclusion was that he faces that so much, he knows how to shut it off and just keep moving forward. So that it's a real thing. And I think for me, like the cold plunges, even this morning, I had no way to cold plunge. So I just turned the shower all the way to cold. And you know how many times I've tried to do that and I've just been too scared. And I was like, nah, it feels too. I'll just stay. This morning, I just did it and I didn't even hesitate. So, you know, and there are tons of lessons in here. There's, you know, the proximity matters, but being around like-minded people under serving a similar mission, I think.
Well, not only that, but the one thing that I love that you said is, because here's the deal. To be freaking quite frank, I'm a little pissed off at you, Fetcher. I mean, because how many times have I tried to put you in situations where you were fearful and you were like, I'm not freaking doing that.
I know.
I mean, a ride at Disneyland.
I know.
Right? I have a picture.
I did ride one, though, by the way.
You did. And I have a picture of anybody who's gone to Disneyland. There's the Cars ride. Now, the Cars ride goes about, I don't know, 15 miles an hour, maybe 20 miles an hour. But the sound and the way the track, it makes you feel like you're going a lot faster. It really does. And I have this picture of Dave in this freaking ride, deathly afraid, clinging to his life, like screaming his head off. And it's the funniest freaking thing in the world, because that ride is like my daughter Hattie rides it, right? She's 8 and with no big deal. So the fact that this is what pisses me freaking off, dude. The fact that you were like, okay, I'm going to get in here. Oh, wait, I'm going to get out. Oh, wait, everybody's looking at me. I'm going to stay in because I don't want to look like a pansy. But yeah, you have no concern looking like a pansy in front of me.
Right. But so I get that, because Shonda actually got pissed at me because I rode a jet ski while I was there. You know how many times she's tried to get us to rent jet skis? She found out I rode a jet ski and we fought all night about it because she was hurt. Her feelings were hurt. Here's the thing, though. Not to go down too much of a rabbit hole, I feel comfortable around you guys.
I know.
I don't care what you think about me. and I know that maybe that sounds bad, but like, here's the other epiphany I had while I was there. Oh, I need to try harder for the people that I love.
Yeah.
And I need to take this stuff back home. So the first thing I thought of was, next time we go to Disneyland, I'm riding rides, dude. I'm going to do it.
Oh,
and
damn.
And I might not be, and listen, I might not ride the craziest one, but I'll get on the Incredicoaster. And I do have this thing where once a year I face a fear, but I've realized that I've also tried to get out of doing that. I don't have really any accountability for it.
Okay. So here's the deal. I'm going to call Shonda right now. You guys can take my wave runners wherever you want. You can take them. You can go. You don't have to rent freaking anything, dude. I've got two.
Okay.
Hook them up to your truck. Go up to McCall.
Okay.
You got them, dude.
Amazing.
Okay. You don't have to rent them.
All right.
Prove to her that you can do it. I'm giving you that as a gift.
I love it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Yeah. But you know how important that is, though, to be able to put yourself in situations that, and we've talked about this a lot, that challenge you to be better.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's about you. Here's the difference, though. It's about you putting yourself in those situations, right? Because if someone else puts you in those situations and they push you in it, before you're ready, then you enter a panic state that it doesn't matter, right? It's not healthy. It's unhealthy.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's a blend. You need the people for accountability and like encouragement and the call, but you also, you need to feel it internally so that you can step into it, you know?
Yeah. But think about this, guys. How many times have you heard me say the secret of success is to surround yourself with people who are better than you?
Absolutely.
Right. That's exactly the situation you were in. You were around your, you surrounded yourself with people in that moment that were better than you at the task or what you were faced with. And you have two choices. You rise to the occasion or you freaking pansy out.
Yep.
And you rose to the occasion, which I absolutely love. And the interesting thing about that is the connection you made with, and this happens to all of us. It's the same thing that happens. Like, I could be yelling at my kids. I've got five kids. So those are four boys that are freaking nuts. I love my family. My boys are freaking insane. I've got five kids and I could be sitting there just frustrated as all get out at Dowern, my senior in high school. I could be so frustrated that kid just like freak. Phone rings. I pick it up. Hey, how you doing? Right? Instantly shut it off. Why can't we do that for the ones we love?
Yeah.
Just like what you talked about.
Yep.
You Shonda's mad at you because you went jet skiing. Why can't we do the same things for the one we love? Because we're comfortable. It's that comfort.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
We open the kimono a little bit more to the people that we love. And we're more vulnerable with them. But at the same time, they deserve the same amount of love and respect that a stranger would.
Yep.
Yes. So I have to say this because my wife and I were literally laying in bed last night having this conversation. And she said, well, I don't remember the topic, but she said, man, Spencer, you're like the most like patient, you know, slow to like lose temper, lose control that I know. And then she hesitated. And then I said, except for with our kids. And it's the same concept. Like, it's really hard to rally me up professionally, like athletically on the basketball court. like I'm pretty even keel guy. But, you know, talking about with those that we love, I don't know what it is with my kids. Like, that's the, even my wife, like my wife and I, like we don't, like as weird as it sounds, like we have bickers and things, but we don't fight. Like I don't feel like I ever lose it on her. My kids, man. So I don't know. There's something to this that we'll have to dive deeper on.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's interesting the journey that we all take, right? Because we all go through these moments of moments of improvement, moments of self-reflection, moments of
it starts with recognition, right?
And it starts with that recognition side of things. And it's interesting. So swing this into the conversation we're going to have today is identifying, like, the key to marketing and the key to success and the key to I think customer acquisition and the key to the things that we do for our company to be able to acquire those customers, to earn trust in those customers, is to know and understanding the journey that they take and the realizations that happen along the way, because it's powerful. Once you can understand that, once you can get through that methodology to be able to truly know what your customer profile is, and I'm not talking about some dumb thing that somebody put on a piece of paper. I'm talking about truly understand your customer profiles, what makes them think, what they're looking for, what their experiences are, why they're coming to you, what their purchasing decisions are. When you truly understand that, that's when you become masterful at your job, and that's when you see growth.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it can start on a piece of paper, but I think where I've fallen down and I've seen most businesses fall short is they don't validate what's on the paper,
right?
By talking to the customers. And then any other touch points, like we had practitioners, which was an amazing resource because practitioners have seen hundreds of patients. So you talk to one practitioner and, like, you know, by the way, we're talking mostly about the consumer health industry. I know, like, I've worked in other categories and this isn't as true, although I do think it applies across the board and we'll talk a little bit about that. But going the extra distance to talk to people and then match that up with your hypothesis.
Yeah, there's a series of epiphanies that I think a lot of entrepreneurs, marketers, business people go through. And it starts with like a lot of people pour a lot of energy, time, and effort into the product that they are creating and recognize that however great your product is, you have to sell it. And so then they have the epiphany, hey, it's not about the product, it's about the marketing. It's about selling it, right? Mm-hmm. And most people stop there. And then they pour a lot of time and energy into marketing and they get stuck, or they're like, it's kind of working, but it's not working as much as I want. And I think that the next epiphany that most people don't really have is it's actually not about marketing. It's about understanding the market. And all great marketing stems from understanding the market, right? And that's what you brought to Micro Formulas. And that's what you're bringing to other consumer health businesses.
Well, and it's funny because even that understanding you brought to me to some degree here, like within the last few months, I mean, you helped me formulate the market side of it. I mean, I started to really, as we were running our pet brand, it started to really be glaringly obvious to me that this wasn't about a brand. It's not necessarily even about the product. It's about the market. I couldn't really ever verbalize that, but we saw it at Microbe taking off, and then as we dove in and we actually talked to people, we found, and the inspiration of a lot of this was even our, I don't know what we called it, the journey from hope, the journey of hope and health.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of our slogans or mission statements, right?
Mission statement.
Yeah.
Mission statement.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
restore hope and health.
Yeah. To restore hope and health. And I thought, wait a minute, restore hope and health is a journey. I remember putting this, we were talking about this earlier. I put this up on my whiteboard. I just put Eugene Schwartz's 5 stages of awareness. You know, it starts with unaware. And these are just awareness levels. We all go through this even when we're learning something. You go from unaware to problem aware to solution aware to most aware. And then, you know, there's a couple you get into like aware at, you know, and then I installed like a few levels above that. But when you compare that to, you think about like, that's just kind of like a logical, you know, black and white journey, but people have feelings when they're going through that journey. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And marketing is about emotion.
And there's gray area in those. Yeah.
Steps. Yes.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is, I remember I would stare at these journeys, these levels of awareness, and I would go talk to a customer. Then I would stare at these levels of awareness and then I'd go talk to a practitioner. And then I would just keep coming back and forth. And then one day I was like, wait a minute, restore hope and health. Hopeless. Hope ignited, hope validated, hope restored. And you just overlay it right on these levels of awareness. And then I would go talk to a customer and they would say, yeah, I've been dealing with this for 10 years and I was just hopeless. I'd tried everything. Okay. You'd tried everything. So you're hopeless because you were unaware that there was a solution. And then I heard a story of somebody from Microbe Formulas that was going through the same thing I was going through. And then I got excited because I was validated that I knew something was there for me. And they literally described this journey.
Yeah.
And then you would talk to a practitioner and they would say, yeah, I would say, who's your best patient? Oh, it's somebody who says I'm almost there. And I thought, damn, that's another awareness level. They're almost aware. That meant they were 80. And then I would talk to a customer. And see what I'm describing is this back and forth of validating the hypothesis and building a customer journey model. I would talk to a customer and they would say, yeah, I'm almost there. If I just had the help of a practitioner. So, you know, I just encourage everyone, and we'll go more into this, but I just encourage everyone to talk to your customers and don't like ask them a ton of questions. Even just start with, and you know, if you're in the consumer health industry, ask them, tell me about your whatever it is, your health journey, your journey with this, with that, and then just shut up and let them talk.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to a COO for an 8-figure supplement brand last week, and they're looking to break into a new segment, right? A new market segment, a new kind of sector with their same supplements. And we had this exact conversation, like, where do I start? And I said, start by talking to them. Even though they're not existing customers, they're future customers that you want, like interview them, ask them what matters to them, right? Like,
yep.
put the product in front of them, get their feedback. Like, you don't need to develop some grand strategy in this black hole silo and then deliver it to the market to then get feedback and know it was all wrong. Like, start with getting feedback. So, I mean, I just can't stress enough what you're saying. Like, yeah. Those avatar interviews, whether they're existing customers or desired future customers, like, that makes all the difference.
Well, and I want to even take a step back, because I think that the journey you're processing and going back and forth and validating the hypothesis began when you yourself became aware of the customer success stories that we were having with the product.
Right.
We were capturing customer success stories, not just testimonials.
Right.
These were actual individuals and customer success. And so even through this process, you went through your own unaware to aware scenario 100%. Of understanding who the customer is, or at least saying, you know what? If we've got 10 of these customer success stories, who else is out there? What can we learn from others? So even going to your point, Spence, talking to the customer can begin an entire concept of understanding them and meeting them where they have emotion.
Yeah.
Because if marketing is about emotion, marketing is about meeting the customer where their emotions are.
Yeah.
Marketing's the platinum rule. You know, we've talked about that in the past. Is like the
great marketing is
great marketing.
Not all marketing.
Not do unto others what market to others the way you want to be marketed to, but market to others the way they want to be marketed to.
Yeah, meet them where they're at.
Meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
And you don't know where they're at unless you take the time to talk to them. Companies go into these big marketing campaigns and hire big agencies and spend thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes $100,000, and they never talk to their customer.
Well, and you guys did this literally. You would fly out to where they lived. And honestly, that was one of the, you know, that was one of the big reasons I know we joke all the time that I turned the job down 3 times, but that was one of the big reasons why I said yes. I was just looking at what you guys were doing. You were truly capturing the emotion in the journey and literally meeting them where they're at by flying on location and taking a crew and interviewing them. And when you listen to these stories, it wasn't a testimonial about the product. It was a testimony to the journey.
Yeah. Right.
And oh, by the way, this product and Dr. Todd Watts and Dr. Jay Davidson and this education, it was actually started with the education and the stories is what really resonated with people. So yeah, dude, that's a really good call.
So the other part of the origin of this thing, this unified ascension ladder strategy, this customer journey focused performance marketing, this, we don't know what we're calling it yet, but other part of the origin, you talk about Eugene Schwartz, you know, 5-stage awareness, you talk about the avatar interviews, the customer interviews, and those being critical. But in the middle of that, you were also doing like in-depth data analysis around purchase paths and buying behavior. So go more, because that's kind of to me like the third pillar on this three-legged stool of what was created and birthed that we're now talking to.
Yeah. So before I get into this, even, you know, if you're listening, just take a moment and think about the last purchase that you made. And I don't mean like at the grocery store. I mean the last new purchase. And then also consider, have you ever really bought something that you had never seen before or never even considered that you had a problem around? Have you ever clicked on an ad and just bought it?
Been a long time.
I feel like you probably have.
Well, here's
that's the quick start.
Here's a perfect example. You remember the steakhouse we went to the very first time in Santa Monica?
Yeah.
Meat on Beach.
Uh-huh.
Right. That was the first time that I was truly introduced to dry aged steak. I've had dry aged steak before, and I'm like, that place was freaking phenomenal. And they had an entire dry age room.
Yeah.
From that moment on, it has been my goal and dream to be able to process and master dry aging at home. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what have I done? I became aware. Like, and then I'm like, okay, so how do I do this? Now I'm becoming solution aware, right? I'm not aware yet because I haven't quite done it. But it's that process of going through the education side of things to be able to make sure that, because I'm probably going to buy a dry age cabinet and it's not cheap, but I'm doing everything I can to understand the education, to know what I'm doing, to know what I'm buying, to meet me where I need to be in order to accomplish my goal.
Before we ate there, had you ever heard of dry aged before?
Not like that. No, but I have.
You hadn't even heard the term?
I've heard the term.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what it could be.
Sure. But like, so my point is, think about that and then be really honest about the time before that. So there's like, even though you don't realize it, you were introduced to the term and you had learned some about what it is.
Yeah.
So that you weren't truly introduced to it in that moment.
Right.
You were introduced to the next level of it.
Right. So here's one. I took a group of youth. We went and floated the Boise River, right? And I'm just sitting there in my flip-flops and the gal next to me has these really nice water shoes on. And I'm like, shoot, I need some of those. Just a few months before, I was at a family reunion, right? Stepping on rocky beach area. And now I'm going to do the same thing in the river. And I'm like, I need water shoes. I was problem aware. Mm-hmm. Right. I knew like it's going to hurt my feet. Flip flops aren't the best. They fall out. They break. Right. Like I need to get some good water shoes. I'm going to do this in the future because I'm going to have more family reunions and more river trips. Like, and I saw hers and I was like, hey, those look good. Tell me how much you like them. Send me the link. And then I went and bought some.
Yeah.
Right. It's like I knew about water shoes.
Right.
Everyone knows about water shoes. But until I was like problem aware enough that it was painful enough. And then it was that trigger that's like, okay, I'm going to go buy.
Yeah. Yeah. So my, and then I'll get into, but we'll get back into the customer journey model and the data that I pulled and everything to validate it. But so my recent problem was I needed some shirts to contrast with this podcast wall. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And I just kept thinking that was my problem. I need shirts to contrast with this podcast wall. Okay. It's summertime. I need a polo. So I started by going to the mall. Okay. I've seen lots of ads for polos, but I started by going to the mall and didn't find anything. And then I went home and I've, like we were talking about, I've lost a little bit of weight. So I pulled out some old shirts that I used to love that fit me well. And I found this Banana Republic polo that I just love that contrasts well with this wall. And so my next thought was, I want to buy more of these Banana Republic polos. And I went to Banana. So the first thing I did is I went to bananarepublic.com. They don't sell them anymore. This thing's like 10 years old. I just kept thinking, I want more shirts that fit like this Banana Republic polo. So I looked at True Classic. I looked at all these different t-shirt, like polo manufacturers. And then I put a question out on Twitter. I finally, like, this is like a month long process, guys, with probably 20 touch points. I finally search, like form fitting polos, whatever. And I land on Built. I land on like a Google Shopping ad. I click on Built's ad. I buy one polo to see if it fits well. That takes another week. And then if I loved it, so I bought four more. All right. So when Built goes in to look at their attribution software or however they're managing their ads,
yeah.
There's going to be, if they're on like a last click, then it's going to show that Google Shopping drove this purchase. Yeah. That is not true at all.
At all.
Right.
What drove the purchase was my problem and the Banana Republic polo that I bought
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
That you still had.
So
I don't have anything.
So if you don't understand that, if you don't truly understand that about me and my problem, it's just one person. But if you, there are tools that will show you my customer journey and all my touch points in between. And I'm not talking about attribution tools. I'm talking about the customer journey. And then you match that with the qualitative and the quantitative of like talking to me and understanding the nuances, then you're just going to create another Google Shopping listing or a Google ad or another piece of Facebook creative to try and convert me. And that had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Right. So when I went into I bring that up first because before you can even understand this concept, you have to be really honest about your own buying behavior because it's all the same. You know, there are trendy products. I agree. There are trendy products that come across our newsfeed and we get interested and we go from unaware to most aware in like 5 minutes. And we're like, oh, this looks cool. It's cheap impulse. Enough and I'll buy it. It's an impulse purchase. So we used a tool at Microbe
formulas called Rockerbox. Rockerbox was originally intended to be like an attribution tool, because I was going down this attribution rabbit hole again. But the real value in it is it helped map customer journey. So it showed through an IP address, it showed one purchase and then all the touch points in between. So I could sample, at one point I sampled like 8,000 purchases. Yeah. And it would show me the number of purchases and the number of paths to purchase. Of those 8,000 purchases, there were like 7,900 unique paths with an average first touch to buy. So an average purchase time of like 12 days and average touch points of like 10. When you would like really scope out and look at all of them, some people were 20 to 30 touch points long. Very few. There was only a very small percentage, like something like 1-3% that made a purchase in like 1-3 touch points.
Yeah.
So when you now take that and you overlay it across talking to people, these different journeys of awareness and emotional journey, there really is an individual journey happening with everyone. And this whole idea of customer journey focused performance marketing becomes about understanding that there's a journey happening, regardless of what you're doing as a company.
Yeah.
There's a journey already happening. Your job is to plug yourself into that. And if you're in the consumer health industry, it's probably going to start by telling the stories and raising the emotion so that they're even open to your education to begin with. And then once they're open to the education, they're problem aware, then voila, you have a solution for it. Whether that's more education or that's a product.
And then they become solution aware.
Right.
And hopefully you have everything in place to be able to capture right then and there.
Yep.
And that's when product matters, that it actually delivers and gets results.
Yeah. But they'll know that already because of the stories you're telling.
Exactly.
Right. That's the key, is because what happens then is people are like, well, wait a second. I'm problem aware. Now I'm solution aware. This has worked for others because here's all the proof. Here's the social proof. And this is interesting because social proof, guys, is not a little freaking pop-up thing on the bottom of your
mind. Dang, Sally in Utah just bought this.
I just put this in this car. So-and-so just purchased three of these. That's not freaking social proof. Social proof is the ability for people to connect with others in similar situations and circumstances that have found a solution.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true social proof. It's not how many people freaking put something in your shopping cart. It's the ability to tell those stories. That's why you have to be a media company. You have to tell the stories of your customers. You have to be able to educate so that they can become. That's why education and customer storytelling is so powerful and so important together, because you help them become problem aware through education, solution aware through education. So problem aware through education and solution aware through education and customer stories, because they can tie the education that you're giving them to customer stories. And that's all part of that journey.
Well, and I would even say, problem aware through stories.
Yeah.
Because, and I'll say this, through the consumer health industry, we'll just keep focusing on consumer health, because when somebody is hopeless, they need like an emotional connection to then open up and be vulnerable enough to reface the fact that, you know, so that what I'm saying is those stories that you guys produced validated people. And there's an emotional response when somebody's validated, especially if they've been on this journey for 10 years. Look, we've consulted with I don't know how many consumer health companies at this point, but I also worked in healthcare. And my wife struggled with endometriosis for 15 years. I watched her go through this. And the moment that she got a little bit of validation and hope was ignited, then hope becomes validated. That just rockets them into the education. That's why they're just so, when you would look at the customer journey touch points at Microbe and Cellcore, it was like Facebook ad, blog article, email sign up, blog article, blog article, blog article, blog article, you know, and then they would
Google
ad, blog article, blog. I mean, like these people were just, you know, they were really they were driving their own health. So
how can someone learn more? Like you talk about these hope, hopeless to hope validated. And we're trying to describe this journey, right?
Yep.
But tell us more about how do they find out more? How do they visualize this a little better?
So two things I'll say. One, we'll put our model in the show notes, and I'll have a Loom video with it kind of walking you through. And then I'll also have a one sheet putting you on the path of how to get started. But I would like today, as you're listening to this, or when you get to your office or wherever you're working, stop and just take a notepad and think about a purchase that you made and just
dissect it.
Yeah. Like genuinely dissect it. And I would even challenge you at that point of purchase, go even further, because I guarantee you there's more to it. I guarantee you, you were like subconsciously up against this problem and researching it and thinking about it. And that's what I really want you to dive into, because once you do that, you'll truly understand that.
Well, once you recognize the pattern in yourself, you'll start seeing it around you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's kind of like
it's that bias.
It's kind of like when you buy a brand new car, right? You're like, man, this car sweet. I've never seen any of these cars on the road. And all of a sudden you start driving around and then everybody has one.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're aware.
Yeah.
And that's the power of being of that self-reflection. But at the same time, I love what you're saying, Dave, is sit down and go through your last purchase process. Even if it was an impulse buy, or a purchase that you really studied on, you really try to figure out. I would map the two. The other thing is I would look up who your top customers are, give them a call and ask them why.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. That's the next thing.
Right. That's the next thing. Cause that's something you could go right now and do. Or look at your 90-day, the 90-day LTV on your customers and identify who's in the top 10% and reach out to them.
Yep.
Find out why.
Yeah. Like genuinely go log into Shopify. If you're on Shopify, go to customers, sort by most spent. That'll give you highest LTV, and then just start reaching out to them and say, and you can incentivize them as well. Like offer them free product, offer them a Amazon gift card or Visa gift card. Ask them for 15 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever you feel comfortable with. I recorded these, but I always ask them. Like you can do cool stuff now where you can get the transcription pulled from the recording and throw it into AI and have AI help you with this.
And analyze the structure of the conversation so that you could be able to identify the touch points they actually made and the purchasing powers behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much available to us right now, but here's the deal. You've got to act. You've got to pick up the phone. You've got to make a phone call.
Yep.
And I don't care who the freak you are. If you're the CEO of a company, or if you're, entry marketing person to a company, you've got to make the call and you've got to take this. I remember one time, I challenged everybody in the company to get on customer support. You remember that?
Yeah.
And I was like, everybody needs at least an hour a week.
I thought that was brilliant.
Get on customer support and answer a call. I remember I sat down and the first call I answered was this amazing individual. And I talked to her for an hour and I learned everything about her, her journey, her problem. If you don't feel comfortable, like, reaching out to somebody, go pick up the phone and answer customer support, or get into a situation where you can talk to who your customers are. And I'm not talking like trade show, because you need to know who your current customers are.
That's the ultimate point. I'm glad you hammered on that, because you can dissect your own, recognize the pattern in yourself. And I think that's important. Just having the awareness that this is going on, but the real work is in talking to the customer and it's going to be uncomfortable at first, depending on how, extroverted, outgoing you are. That's the real point. And there are different places you can start. Like Ryan said, you can start, if you've got a customer support team, start taking calls, start exporting your reviews and throw them into chat and say, hey, chat, here's 50 reviews, ChatGPT, here's 50 reviews. Can you tell me some of the common themes and problems and emotions that you see coming out of this? I've done that before and it's amazing seeing how it works, but at the end of the day, you just need to reach out to people and get on the phone with them.